This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Deuter. They've been making technical hiking, backpacking, snow sport, bike, and travel packs, German engineered since 1898 for comfort, fit, and ventilation. I've seen them on the trails as far from home as Patagonia and as close as New Hampshire. And speaking of German, stay tuned for later in the episode when a member from the Deuter team teaches me a few phrases. Stay equipped for a life of adventure with a durable, comfortably crafted Deuter pack. Find your perfect fit at deuter.com. That's deuter.com. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores. For you right now, like, what is the significance of trails in your life?
It's pretty much everything. It informs everything that I do these days, whether I'm promoting trails or thinking about building them or working, designing them or advocating for them or trying to get more people out. It's so much of what I do. I'm lucky enough that I've been able to create my job doing these different things. And it's just, trails are life.
This is Serena Dufault, founder of Trails Inspire. Today she says that trails are her life, but it wasn't always that way. She didn't step on a trail until she was 19. Serena's story is one of patience, both on the trail and in shaping her career. And even today, trails are my life is not what you might expect to hear from someone with fibromyalgia, a pain syndrome characterized by chronic pain, fatigue, and tenderness to the touch. Nor would you expect to hear it from someone who says this about her upbringing in suburban Chicago.
I never even heard the word hiking. I heard mall walking. I grew up like so completely suburban, big giant 90s mall hair. And I was a fashion design student. So to say that I was not outdoorsy, I didn't even go on a hike until I was like 19, right before I moved to Arizona. I heard about this thing called hiking in Arizona, and I wanted to try it out before I went. And so my boyfriend at the time, we drove to Kettle Moraine State Park in Wisconsin because you couldn't go hiking anywhere in the Chicago suburbs. I mean, we have forest preserves, which have like little paved paths and things like that, but we went up to Kettle Moraine State Park. And we went for a hike, and I don't even remember which trail we did or anything like that, but that was my very first hike I ever did. And it wasn't until I moved to Arizona that any of that became relevant in my life.
You might recall from previous episodes that the definition of outdoorsy is totally relative. Serena was kind enough to talk with me the day after the Outdoor Retailer trade show. 4 days on her feet and a whole lot of socializing. I saw her there the first day, and she mentioned that she was a teeny bit envious of Ambreen Tariq of Brown People Camping for her childhood, going on camping trips with her own Indian immigrant family. Serena's dad is also Indian, but he didn't have that interest in sleeping outdoors. So by her own standards, Serena didn't consider herself outdoorsy then. As a teenager, she dreamt of being a fashion designer. But because she graduated from high school 2 years early, she went to community college before taking the next step. She discovered a passion for archaeology and changed her course to go to the University of Arizona. Her big driver wasn't Arizona. It was something different. But it's where she found her home.
That's all I knew, though, was that Arizona was hot. I'd never visited before I moved there. One of the reasons that I picked it was it had a really good archaeology program. But one of the things that kind of tipped the scales was there was a photo of the mall, the student quad kind of thing that we have at the University of Arizona. And it was lined with palm trees. And there was this big mountain in the middle of it. And I was like, wow, I've never even seen anything that looks like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't know that that mountain was 8,000 feet tall. I didn't know that that mountain was in Saguaro National Park, that it was in a wilderness area, that you couldn't drive up it. I just saw this mountain and I was like, wow, that just mountains and palm trees to somebody that lives in the Chicago suburbs that's like paradise.
Which often is appealing when you're 18, 19 years old.
Absolutely. And I knew my whole life, I knew I wasn't going to stay in the Chicago suburbs, maybe in the city, but even that, I just never really felt like that was the place for me when I was growing up. I always wanted to go somewhere else. Mm.
So how did you go from taking more casual hikes to starting to section hike?
My first hike was in the Grand Canyon. I had this boyfriend when I was traveling to school, and we drove across the country in this little red sports car to move me to Arizona. The first thing we did when we went to Arizona was we went to the Grand Canyon. The first day we got there, it was actually raining so hard we couldn't do anything much. We went around on the rim. But the second day, we went on the South Kaibab Trail to Cedar Ridge, and it just absolutely blew my mind. There is such a difference, and I tell people this all the time, between looking into the Grand Canyon and looking up and having the Grand Canyon around you. Hmm. And I think even then, like, I didn't know anything about hiking. I didn't know anything about the Grand Canyon. I probably didn't even know you could raft the river at the bottom. I had never thought about backpacking, but that hike definitely sparked something in me. I didn't even know at that time, but it's interesting that my very first hike in Arizona happened to be on the Arizona Trail.
Wow. I said wow here because the Arizona Trail is hugely significant to Serena and her work. But before we dive into all that, one of the unique things about Serena is that while today trails are her life, they aren't her husband Brian's life. And they've been married for 15 years. Because that can be a tricky balance to strike, I asked her about it, and it helps us fill in some of her background, how she went from hiking in the Grand Canyon for the first time to talking about trails for a living.
What advice do you have for other people who have a partner who's not interested in hiking when that's such a big part of your life?
So my evolution of hiking, people meet me and I'm outdoorsy, and they always expect my husband to be outdoorsy as well. And so I get the question, does your husband hike with you? And I always smile and I say, absolutely not. And like I said, I didn't grow up being outdoorsy, and I didn't start hiking until a lot later. And Brian was actually one of the people that took me on some of my first hikes when I was in Arizona. So Brian and I met shortly after my accident.
That accident? Serena was hit by a car when walking across the street in January of 1997, so 21 years ago. They met a few months later. Her acute injuries were healed, but she wasn't yet experiencing those chronic symptoms of fibromyalgia.
And so when we met, I was totally healthy, and we would start going on hikes and stuff like that. And that's, you know, how we met. He took me to Seven Falls, which is a popular hike out here, and that really sparked my interest. But shortly after we met, I started feeling worse. I started having this chronic pain happening, and I was having problems sleeping, and people really couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And then I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. And at my sickest, so like a year and a half afterwards, you know, I lost my job that I had, and I was pretty much bedridden. And so to go from that to one day I just decided I was going to start walking with my dog. And so Brian would come with me, and me and my dog Zeus and Brian, we'd go on these small walks, sometimes around the block. And then sometimes we would go to the Catalina State Park and we'd do this loop. And this loop was 2 miles, and it would kill me. It was just so exhausting. And I remember there's this little hill at the top, the first part of the hike, and my dog would like actually pull me up that part of the hike. And, you know, I would be tired after this little 2 mile hike, but I loved the feeling of it. And so that made me do more. And so as I did more, and this is very, very gradually building up the amount of distance that I went and things like that. And at a certain point, I started to get stronger, and my hikes, instead of being like 2 or 3 miles, I would go on like a 6 mile hike. It was at that point where Brian was like, yeah, I'm not really interested. You can go take the dog. So then it was just me and Zeus. And I was really unsure of my ability. You know, as I got more into the outdoors, I would try and package it in a way that would be appealing to Brian, especially once I got into backpacking. Once I got into backpacking, I was like, oh my gosh, you got to do this with me, even though we'd been backpacking once before and he didn't like it. But then I realized it was like one day I was sitting there thinking, you know, Brian has been trying to get me interested in football for the entire time we've been together. There is no possible way that you could package football that is going to make it interesting to me. So I used that analogy, and it really made me realize, like, this just isn't for him. Mm. This is my thing, and I'm not going to try and make it his thing, because it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. So you put yourself in his shoes, and it made it a little easier to understand, because it's tough when you really love something and you love someone and you want to share that with them.
It's fine to have a partner that's not interested. It's fine if you don't do everything together. And the biggest thing has been navigating, like, once I started leaving more and more often, like, navigating that and making sure that your partner is taken care of and feels comfortable. One of the biggest things is I carry a satellite transmitter, a Garmin InReach, which helps me, first of all, because it's got a SOS function on it. Yeah. So Brian knows if anything should happen to me, I could get I could call search and rescue and get out of there. But also it has two-way texting. And so we'll exchange texts no matter where I am at night. And that definitely helps. The fact that Brian wasn't interested in hiking gave me the opportunity to do all of this stuff solo, which was a completely different experience, and, you know, an experience of self-discovery and just feeling like I was totally okay out there by myself. That in itself was a huge gift. It's funny because people are always like, oh, you know, he doesn't hike with you. And it's like, but I value my solo time out there. Like, that's precious. And I wouldn't even have probably done that if my partner was a hiker.
Serena spent more and more time solo in the outdoors, but she always does it in a way that connects her to others. We'll talk more about that after this. This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Deuter.
Deuter? That's how it's pronounced?
Yeah, Deuter, named after the founder, Hans Deuter. They've been making technical hiking, backpacking, snow sport, bike, and travel packs, German engineered since 1898 for comfort, fit, and ventilation.
Deuter.
Deuter. I feel you. One of the hardest parts of hosting a podcast is making sure I pronounce names correctly. And even if it's intimidating sometimes, it doesn't make it scary. Kind of like hiking and backpacking, it's always worth it. The Deuter team even taught me how to say She Explores in German.
Sie erkundet.
Erkundet.
Sie erkundet.
Yes. Sie erkundet.
Okay. Sie erkundet.
That was the best one.
Oh, good. I didn't even think about it. I think that's what makes the difference.
Nice German, Gail. I'm impressed.
Stay equipped for a life of adventure with a durable, comfortably crafted Deuter pack. Find your perfect fit at deuter.com. That's deuter.com.
That feeling of, like, having all your stuff, just the freedom of it. The idea that you could take all of your things and go camping in all of these different places, it just really opened up a lot of possibilities.
We're back. As you heard before the break, Serena got more and more comfortable hiking solo. And she found that she loved backpacking too. But it was a slow progression. Her first backpacking trip was with her partner in 2001. The second was in 2005 with her dog Zeus. I asked her about the gap between those two trips.
Well, so it was 4 years for a couple different reasons. First of all, I had no gear. When I did that first trip, we rented everything from the University of Arizona Outdoors School. part of the reason was not having the gear, but also part of the reason was I was still managing my fibromyalgia at that time. And so I was still having flares and my body wasn't real. It just, I couldn't count on it. And I think that might have been part of the reason. You know, it was scary. I was like, you know, I'm looking at this from like where I come from now, where I have all of this experience. But like to think back to that beginner's mind that I had, where everything was completely new. I didn't know anything about what I was supposed to take. And everything was scary, you know, when you don't have that familiarity. People forget, like, I'm so comfortable out there right now that I always say, like, the outdoors is like my living room. But, you know, it definitely wasn't like that at the beginning. Part of the reason that I hiked solo when I first started was I was so unsure of myself and my abilities because I had been sick. And so I didn't know that I was a much stronger hiker than I thought. I thought I was this total weakling that was going to keep everybody back. To combat that, I just kind of did stuff on my own. And so when I did hike with people, I was surprised to find out that like I could actually keep up with them.
Yeah, and you were also hiking through a lot of pain, right?
Right, and especially in the beginning. So between like 2006 and 2016, I went that whole time without a flare. So it really, I wasn't able to like really start backpacking, I think, and feel comfortable being out there until I had gotten myself off of my medications and my fibromyalgia had gotten to a point where it's still in the background, but it wasn't flaring up.
What does a flare up feel like?
So combine like the flu. Right. So you know how you feel when you have the flu, everything's achy and you're tired.
Yeah.
And then combine that with like the worst night's sleep you've ever had. You're laying there, but you don't get any restorative properties of the sleep. One of the things that fibromyalgia does, it kicks you out of your sleep pattern. So it's just kind of a big giant waste of time, you know?
Yeah.
Mine in particular, everybody's is different. I definitely want to make that known. It's like, everybody's fibromyalgia, it's a syndrome. So it's a series of things that affect everybody a little differently. But with me, a big component was I have these areas that I call my fibromyalgia spots where it literally feels like someone's sticking a fiery knife into wherever that is.
Oh,
and it's just like, it's like a nerve pain more than a muscle pain. And they're learning more and more about it. But it's a hypersensitivity of the neurotransmitters. So, for example, like if somebody gave me too hard of a hug, it would hurt. Or if somebody just like poked me in the arm, it would hurt. So everything's like hypersensitive. And then that also goes through. It's not just like a physical thing. It's like an anxiety thing because your whole, just like your whole body's kind of freaking out and hypersensitive. Before I've learned how to manage it, I might have just been like, okay, I'm just going to, you know, I'm just going to lay here. I'm going to cancel everything and I'm not going to do anything. But so it was, like I said, it was 10 years between the one flare before I started hiking and then the flare when I was already a backpacker. And what I did with that one is I just did it anyway. I might modify it. So I might not do a 20-mile day. I might dial it back or I might take a nap in the middle of the day. But I found that it's going to make me way angrier and then it's going to make me way more uncomfortable to lie here because then there's no distraction.
Yeah.
I'd rather feel like crap in the Grand Canyon than feel like crap on my bed, you know? Like, if I'm going to feel bad, I want to lounge around and like look at canyon walls or a running river or, you know, the desert. Obviously, there's times when you need to just be like, okay, I can't do this today, cancel everything. But I think, you know, 9 times out of 10 or even more, when I go out, I'm not, it takes my mind off of it.
Yeah.
All that stuff is still going to be there. It's like, what are you going to do while it's happening? The The Arizona Trail is an 800-mile multi-use trail, so you can hike it, you can bike it, you can ride a horse on it, and it goes all the way from Mexico to Utah.
Serena noticed the Arizona Trail for the first time on a hike in 2007, and she decided she wanted to hike the whole thing. We'll talk more about that after this. This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Stamps.com. Odds are, if you start your own business, whether it's an Etsy shop or a consulting company like Serena, you're going to ship packages and mail letters. And that time you spend going to the post office is super valuable. For me, it's been really convenient using Stamps.com for She Explores this summer because it means I'm able to print postage to ship products like tank tops and stickers, all without leaving my home office. And I can do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's easy and convenient. Right now, you can use Explores for this special offer of a 4-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone on the top of the homepage and type in Explores. That's stamps.com, enter Explores. And use the time you saved going to the post office doing what you love.
It was first hiked in 1985 by a Flagstaff math teacher named Dale Shoewalter, who came up with this idea because he wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail, but he didn't have the time. And so he lived in Arizona, and he looked at a map, and there's a bunch of public land in Arizona that goes up the center of the state. Forests and national parks and things like that.
At first, he wanted to do it to promote the trail and help complete it. There were still 60 miles left to go. But due to timing and some personal circumstances, a section hike made the most sense.
And while I was thinking about it, I was like, you know, if I can't do it for the trail, let's put a positive message out there about fibromyalgia. So in 2007, fibromyalgia was still pretty new. When I was first diagnosed in 1998, people didn't even think it was an actual thing. It was like, oh, well, you know, bunch of women are being whiners. Malingerers is a word that I heard. You know, it's like, that's so insulting. It's insulting, it's dismissive, and it hurts, you know, to be in so much pain and in so much discomfort, and then to have somebody tell you that it's all in your head. I was actually pretty lucky because I got diagnosed within a year and a half of having my accident, but some people went for years and years and years. So there wasn't really a whole lot known about it. And even in 2007, not only was there not a lot known about it, but there was absolutely no good stories about it. It was like all of these like doom and gloom, like she got fibromyalgia and she never worked again, you know. And it's also, I think it's notable that it affects more women than men. Men are also affected, but I think that also, you know, women have a harder time getting attention for medical issues. And so I decided to put a bright spot out there where people could look at this and be like, oh, well, maybe I don't have to like stop doing everything I love. I just wanted to put that positive message out there and then also raise awareness that this is in fact an actual thing.
So, you know, I think a lot of people don't know that it's possible to section hike, that that's something that, you know, it's a way of seeing a trail just like in a different way from through hiking. Can you tell me about like some of the ways that you prepared for that and the ways that you set yourself up for success section hiking an 800-mile trail?
That was one of the things that made it manageable. To look at an 800-mile trail and think, I'm going to hike 800 miles, that's really intimidating, especially if you've never done it before. A lot of the preparation was going through and reading, because there wasn't a lot of information on the Arizona Trail. There was, I'm going to say I was probably one of the first 50 or so to hike it. But what I did is I actually looked at the trail journals and the preparations of other long distance trails and how they would do it. Back then it meant like looking at long distance hiking forums like White Blaze for the Appalachian Trail. So a lot of it was, which piece am I going to do next? Like, what's the weather? I didn't really have a completion schedule I didn't have like a certain amount of time that I wanted to do it in. I was just kind of doing piece by piece as I could. Sometimes it had to do with what was good weather. Sometimes it was I wanted to stay near my house. And then, you know, sometimes it was, you know, I did a couple longer trips where my dad came out from Chicago specifically to drive me around and be my support crew because he's awesome. You know, you don't hear about section hiking, but it is a great way to see a long distance trail because thru-hikers have to take just whatever comes at them, like whatever weather, whatever trail conditions. And then you actually, because you're thru-hiking, you might not see those pieces in the optimal time because you're just working within your weather window. But with section hiking, not only can you plan to see like fall colors in this area and wildflowers in this area, if it's raining or the weather's bad or whatever else, you can just be like, eh, I'll do it next week. You know, instead of like topping it out and being like, oh, I have to keep going. You know, you can just be like, yeah, I'm not going to go into that giant snowstorm and I'm going to hang out and do something in Southern Arizona instead. It also takes that like monolithic piece out of it where it's like, you have to do all 800 miles, or I mean, if, especially like with the, you know, PCT, you know, 2,600 miles, like you don't have to do it that way. And most people can't. Realistically, it's hard to get that amount of time off. And at the time that I was section hiking, I was actually working, I was a massage therapist and I had my own business and I was also working for a spa. And so I would go and work on the weekends because I prefer to hike during the week when there's not so many people out anyway.
Oh, that's great. Because I think a lot of people are intimidated. Like you said, they want to do a thru hike, but they don't know that it's possible to do it in a different way. Like we had a woman in the She Explores Facebook group who said, you know, she's a mom and she would love to do this, but she doesn't know if she can because she's a mom. But it's a lot more accessible if you think about it in sections.
Absolutely. And, you know, another thing that I always tell people, you don't have to do the whole thing. Mm. Like, you know, people have this idea that either you do the whole Arizona trail or you don't do it at all. And I think that, you know, that's just, it's such a shame because there's some pieces that are wonderful standalone pieces that you still get that culture. It's all about like being a part of a larger thru hiking culture. And no matter what, no matter if you're doing like a day hike or you're doing a, you know, overnight or you're doing the whole thing, you're still part of the Arizona trail culture and you still get a feeling of that. You might not get the feeling of, you know, being out for 2.5 months at a time, but I think part of the fun of long distance trails is you get to be a part of something larger than just the trail you're on. And you don't have to do the entire thing to experience that. If you do like a day hike or a section hike, you know, make sure to go into the town that's nearby. And because that's part of this, like half of the thru hiking is the hiking, but then half of the thru hiking is the getting into town and, you know, exploring these new places. And I think that that gives you a taste without having to do the entire thing.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think is the significance for like the greater communities of having trails that run through them or by them?
Well, I have seen some really amazing transformations. So to walk it back a little bit, so I section hiked in 2008, 2009. It was such an amazing experience in so many different ways that I wanted to share it with people. And so I put together a slideshow presentation and I started promoting the trail on my own. So I do talks and, you know, I would talk to anybody about this trail because first of all, it had given so much to me. And second of all, it's an amazing project. It's the largest volunteer project in all of Arizona history. And so to be a part of that and like then know that like there's all these people that don't even know about it yet, that spurred me on to write about it on my blog. And I did that for several years. And I was still helping to build the trail with a trail crew called the Crazies. We would meet like every other Thursday for years and years and years. And the funny part about that was the average age was 65 and it was all guys and me, like 30-year-old me.
In 2011, the former executive director of the trail caught wind of her volunteer work and reached out about a new paid position that would connect her with the communities behind the trail.
the conversation went a little something like this. You know, he was like, oh, you know, we've got this idea for this gateway community liaison for the Arizona Trail now that the trail is almost complete. I was like, oh my gosh, you're actually asking to hire me to go promote this trail. So of course I said yes. It was just really part-time at the time, and I was still working as a massage therapist, but that totally changed everything. I became the gateway community liaison for the Arizona National Scenic Trail. He had said that what he wanted was somebody shaking hands on the ground that could be the face of the trail to these communities, because Dale Shewalter, who came up with the idea of the trail, the communities were always part of the larger vision. And, you know, anybody who's done any long distance hiking knows, or even just gone on a day hike, knows how awesome it is to go into these communities and like have a beer or some food or a nice place to stay. And so when I started in 2011, I got a blank stare from just about everybody when I asked them about the Arizona Trail, even if the trail ran right past their business or right past their house. I would come into town and I would say, you know, hey, have you heard of the Arizona Trail? And they would look at me and they would be like, yeah, we got trails around here. Be like, no, the Arizona National Scenic Trail. It's 800 miles. You can hike it, bike it, ride a horse on it. No one had heard of it. Also, another part is I have no training in this.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of making it up as I went along. And every community was different. Some of the communities were immediately like, yeah, that's awesome. Let's get on board. And some of the communities were like, I'm not quite sure why we should care, you know? And so then it was up to me to figure out, because when I first came on, I actually came on more of like thinking of it, the job as I'm the liaison between, and so I'm going to make sure that these communities know what's up so that the trail users can be treated properly and, you know, have their needs taken care of when they come to town. The thing that I didn't realize that was that there's this whole other economic development piece of it where, fine, you're helping the trail people, but you can actually change the economic landscape of these communities if they embrace the trail.
Serena got a lot of satisfaction out of the work and saw real change occur socially and economically.
To go from nobody knows that the trail even exists to this embracing of the people that are hiking the trail was just, it's so gratifying to me.
Since 2011, Serena has also thru-hiked the Arizona Trail and has stepped out on her own to start Trails Inspire, a consulting company that provides services dedicated to championing the outdoors as a place of personal health, economic development, and tourism through public speaking, trail design, freelance writing, and photography. An example of that work, she's written a community engagement handbook for the Florida Scenic Trail. She's also dedicated to promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion for those spaces, which is really evident in her very first engagement.
So the very first project that Trails Inspire signed on was a community trails project for the town of Tucson, which is the gateway community to the Grand Canyon. And I've developed an 11.5-mile trail system. It's multi-use, non-motorized, brand new trail, and it's in three different categories. You know, it basically started from nothing. The town said, we want a trails plan and have at it. And so it was interesting because I got to develop the method by which we came to the trails plan, which was a lot of community engagement and asking the folks in town what they wanted, and then doing some public meetings with stakeholders. And then I developed a plan that includes three different kinds of trails. There's commuter trails for folks to get to and from work, because a lot of the people come from other countries to work at the Grand Canyon and they don't have cars. So they're walking back and forth from the community housing and they don't have a sustainable trail to do that on right now. So that's one of the pieces. And then some recreational loops that are south of town, multi-user, you can bike them or hike them, ride a horse, go running, and that connects the town with the campground with some community housing and makes some really nice recreational loops. But the piece that I'm most excited about is an interpretive trail called the Grand Canyon History Trail, which is right in town, and it's 0.8 miles, and it's ADA accessible, and it tells the human history of the Grand Canyon. So I have a background in archaeology, and I love the Grand Canyon, but one of the things that makes me insane is that people do not understand that it's not Disneyland. Mm. It wasn't built for you. People have lived here for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And so when I was a river guide in the Colorado, I always made sure that people understood, like, this is somebody's home. And I think when you realize it's somebody's home, it also makes you treat it a little bit better. I always used to say, you know, treat it like your grandmother's house. You wouldn't, like, go throw trash on your grandma's floor, right? You want to respect the place. So this idea that I could use this trail system to teach people about the canyon and teach people about the local, not native history, but people who actually still live there. People don't realize that there are natives living in the canyon. And so to take that perspective and bring it to a wider audience, 6 million people visit the Grand Canyon every year, and a lot of them come through the South Rim and the town that I was working with. And so I developed a trails master plan, and the master plan just got approved by town council last month. So we'll go into the environmental studies next year and then probably build in 2020. And I'll be working with the tribes and the local community to develop the interpretation plan for the Grand Canyon History Trail. So that's something that's also very important to me, is that it's not just me saying, here's your story. You know, I want to work with people to say, you know, let me help you tell your story and the story of this place.
And a big part of Serena's story is that of the Arizona Trail. So it makes sense that she's going to write a guidebook.
So tell me about the book that you're working on.
Well, this is super exciting because this is the culmination of a lot of this Arizona Trail work that I've been doing for 11 years. It's with Wilderness Press, and it's Day Hikes on the Arizona National Scenic Trail. So it's not a guide about how to day hike the entire trail, but it's 26 of the absolute best pieces of the trail that you can get done in a day. And I think it's something that's really necessary because right now there's this monolithic Arizona Trail, and it's 800 miles and there's 43 passages. But if you want to know like where the best pieces are, there's still not really a resource for that yet. I've been on this trail and I know it better than most people. And so for me to be able to share my favorite spots with people is just amazing. To bring the community engagement part in there, each of the hikes is connected to one of the gateway communities.
Oh, cool.
And so I'll be able to give somebody a cool hike to do, and then you go into the nearest town, and this is what that town has to offer. So driving travel and tourism into those towns, I've partnered with the Arizona Office of Tourism on the project. They're giving me some support, and I'm doing a series of articles leading up to the book's publication in 2020. And so as I'm doing my research, I'll be able to do these fun articles on like, hey, this is where I am this trip, and this is what I've seen, and you know, just get people really excited about the Arizona Trail, because as much work as has been done since, you know, it was completed in 2011, there's still tons of people, even in Arizona, even in these gateway communities, that don't know about it. And to be able to like bring that to a wider audience has always been my goal.
Oh my God. And you're going to know it like the back of your hand by the time you finish.
Well, I actually know it like the, I, you know, it's funny because I haven't hiked some of these pieces since 2014 when I did my through hike. Mm. That was like, it's so neat to see because it's been 4 years for some of them. It's like the Arizona Trail's all grown up. The first time that I hiked it, we were both kind of rough and figuring it out. And then, you know, it was complete, but it still wasn't signed real well and stuff like that in 2014. And like now that I'm revisiting these pieces, it's all signed and it's all fancy. And, you know, it's just got a lot of people on it. Whereas before, you know, you could hike for days and you wouldn't see a single soul. So it's just neat to see that evolution of both myself and the trail throughout the years.
Would you recommend to others getting to know a trail like that, hiking the same trail, you know, more than once?
Oh, yeah. I think that you just always see something different. Maybe go a different direction. For me, it's been where I've worked and almost lived. I feel like I've lived on the trail for the last bunch of years. And so I have all of these places that I consider my offices and, like, you know, it's just, it's fun to like revisit something. I mean, I absolutely love the idea of going new places, and I definitely do that. But it's like visiting your old buddy.
I'm excited to keep following Serena and her work with Trails Inspire. You can find her on Instagram at DesertSerena and learn more about her consulting company at www.trailsinspire.com. I'll link all resources in our show notes and via the episode landing page at she-explorers.com/podcast. Thank you to our sponsors, Deuter and Stamps.com. Links are located in our show notes and the episode landing page. And if you enjoy listening to She Explores, please take the time to review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It'll help other people find us. Even better, share She Explores with a friend. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, so make sure to tag us so we'll see it. If you enjoy She Explores, you'll probably enjoy our sister podcast, Women on the Road. Hosted by Laura Hughes, it's filled with stories of honest experiences of life on the road from the women who've lived them firsthand. Until next week, catch up with us in our She Explores podcast Facebook group. There we talk about recent episodes, give each other advice, and share resources and more stories about our time in the outdoors. Music is by Kay Engel and Lee Rosevere via the Free Music Archive. Music is also by The Mariner. Next week, we have a very special guest. But until then, have fun out there.